supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Brad Linder, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller's off this evening. The Children's Hospital in Wilmington is teaming up with a Philadelphia tech company to design the same kind of on-demand transportation that companies like Uber and Lyft provide. From the health desk, Tanya English reports.
The idea is to give that convenience to young patients who need a stretcher or use a wheelchair, with less waiting and fewer headaches. Ed Wilmer from DuPont Hospital for Children says when a medically complex kid has a day of appointments, a care coordinator has to call 2 or 3 days in advance to book a ride. That's all fine, he says, if there are no unexpected delays.
That transportation person comes back at 11:30. Someone says to them, the patient's not ready, and they say, oh, well, I can't wait for them. I've got to go to do additional runs. And we say, well, when will you be back? And they say, well, we don't really know. Call us later. And that happens every day.
A 2005 survey estimated that 3.6 million Americans miss or delay medical care each year because of transportation problems. DuPont Hospital is working with a Philadelphia company, Ride Roundtrip, which designed a web portal and a mobile app. CEO Mark Switage says the service adjusts if a patient needs to stay a little longer for an MRI or some other medical test.
So that patient's ready for a transport home after that MRI experience. Care manager logs in, books the request. We send the request to the most appropriate and closest vehicle available for the transport home. In many cases, we can cut a wait time from 4 hours down to minutes.
That's the plan anyway. Switage is brokering relationships with state-approved transportation companies that will install a round-trip communication device in each of their vehicles. Children's Hospital will offer the service to patients in the Medicaid program first. The Medicaid benefit includes payments for non-emergency medical transportation. I'm Tanya English, WHYY News.
Polls show health care is one of the most important issues for voters. During the campaign, President-elect Donald Trump pledged to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, although since winning the election, he's vowed to keep some of the more popular parts of the law. Trump's victory puts two of his supporters in rural Schuylkill County in a bit of a short-term bind as they decide whether to get health insurance for next year. But Ben Allen reports why Abra and Matt Schultz say they don't mind.
The Schultzes recently built a house in Pottsville. It's a typical middle-class neighborhood, and Matt works as a carpenter foreman for a construction company. They are right in Trump's wheelhouse, Republicans in a Republican county.
Don't touch my paperwork. Don't even try to touch it.
There's a thick notebook in front of Abra in her kitchen. A file folder with policy documents and notes filled as high as a stack of pancakes.
I get so stressed out about it. Like, I literally, I'll not pick one until the very last minute that I have, like, that deadline day.
Abra's husband, Matt, makes good money, but the health insurance offered at work isn't that great. Since he usually gets laid off in the winter when construction slows down, he and Abra buy coverage on the Affordable Care Act exchange. They're in a donut hole. They make too much money for tax credits, but not enough that they don't have to think about budgets. 2 years ago, they were paying $530 a month for a plan they liked. Abra looks at the options for this year.
So basically we have, let's say, one for $881, one for $938, one for $984 with, like, deductibles. Or, like, look at, like, these are insane.
That's for two relatively healthy adults.
The one that we would be stuck with would be the silver. This is $881.50, and our deductible would be $7,000.
Add the cost of insurance for their two kids, too.
You want a noise?
They're expecting to pay about $14,000 in health care premiums next year. $14,000. That adds up to a vote for Trump.
His plan is to work with the insurance companies. To hopefully, you know, get it down where it should be.
Abra says she never really paid attention to politics until Barack Obama won in 2008. Then Obamacare took effect and...
Yes, that was kind of number one, I guess, in my book.
Abra liked what Trump said about Obamacare on campaign stops, like one in King of Prussia.
Obamacare has to be replaced, and we will do it, and we will do it very,
very quickly. It is a catastrophe.
She says he was more concerned than Democrat Hillary Clinton about how it was affecting people like her.
I don't know. I don't know if I don't want to say it's like a feeling or something like that. Like, I don't know. That was my feeling, and that's what I went with.
As she sees it, so what if she's in limbo while rumors about the future of the ACA swirl? Larry Levitt with the nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation hears her frustration with the law.
These are people who are playing by the rules and doing the right thing, and they feel like they're getting the shaft.
Levitt has been studying healthcare policy for years. No one likes higher and higher premiums, but he says there's a trade-off.
Before the ACA, to get insurance on your own, you had to fill out a medical questionnaire, and an insurer would only take you if you were reasonably healthy. You know, that kept premiums down, but it's because sick people were excluded from the market altogether.
Levitt says to get to a point where premiums only increase slightly every year, while everyone can still get coverage, no matter their pre-existing condition, government might have to create and fund high-risk pools to the tune of billions of dollars a year.
It would, if this were easy, it already would have happened.
Oh, you want me to play? You play for mommy.
Abra Schultz says she understands those concerns, but wants the best for her family, especially lower premiums.
He just wants to fix what needs to be fixed, which I think is wonderful news.
For those who buy their insurance on the exchange and want it to start January 1st, the deadline has come and gone. Schultz says she's going to buy, but if Trump tells the IRS to drop the penalty for people who don't get insurance, she might drop the insurance. Ben Allen, Pottsville, Schuylkill County.
After taking the trip to Schuylkill County, Ben Allen checked in with Abra Schultz as the sign-up deadline for 2017 approached.
So what was your decision?
We bought insurance. It's actually more than we thought it was going to be. The one that we were going to pick, my doctor's office doesn't accept it anymore, so if I would have picked that one, which was the lower one that we could have gotten, we would have had to switch doctors, that's not something that I wanted to have to do. I mean, I really don't feel like you should have to do that, lose your doctor. So we ended up having to go with a more expensive plan.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really I can do about it. So we're going to try to have it for as long as we can try to afford it. I mean, and then if it comes unaffordable, we'll just, I guess, have to cancel it. But for now, we're hoping we can just stick it out a little bit until hopefully it changes.
I was going to ask you, what do the next couple of months hold?
I don't know. I mean, hopefully he said in his first 90 days, you know, it's definitely something that was on his priority. So let's hope it changes. I mean, that's the only thing I can do. I mean, I don't have any pull in that department, you know, so kind of just at the mercy of will he be able to change it for the better or not.
That's Abra Schultz speaking to Ben Allen about how she's handling her health insurance for 2017 in the wake of Trump's victory. More on the story at transforminghealth.org. When people say happy holidays, the greeting usually means Christmas and Hanukkah, but Kwanzaa, which celebrates African-American culture, also begins today. As WHYY's J. Scott Smith reports, the holiday is celebrating a landmark this year.
Kwanzaa began 50 years ago, founded as an alternative to Christmas and Hanukkah. Since then, it's become a yearly celebration of African-American culture, but it's had its difficulty finding its place amid the crowded holiday calendar.
A lot of people know about our traditional celebrations around Christmas. A lot of people know about traditional celebrations around Hanukkah. And we'd like to put Kwanzaa on many people's radar as well.
That's Jack Drummond, who directs Philadelphia's Office of Black Male Engagement. The city is planning to celebrate Kwanzaa's 50th anniversary this week, along with observances of Christmas and Hanukkah.
The city would like to, under Mayor Kenney's administration, officially acknowledge it for the 50th anniversary, and we're also looking to acknowledge it symbolically starting next year in 2017 with the presentation of a kinara.
The kinara holds 7 candles, each symbolizing one of the 7 core principles of Kwanzaa, commonly called the Nguzo Saba. The city has acknowledged the holiday in the past, but Drummond says the city plans to mark the holiday in a bigger way in the future. On Tuesday, the Police Touch Museum holds its 2nd annual Kwanzaa celebration, and its president and CEO Trish Wellenbach says it represents a great learning experience for the kids and for parents.
Adults learn from children just as much as children learn from adults, and to see young children just embrace the diversity of different cultures is a wonderful way for us to demonstrate to the community our openness and our willingness to learn from others and to appreciate that all cultures have value and traditions that we can learn from.
For WHYY News, I'm J. Scott Smith.
If you live or work in Philadelphia, chances are you've crossed paths with a homeless person asking for money on the street. Did you stop and hand over some change? Keep on walking because you didn't know what the money would be spent on? A free mobile app developed by a pair of researchers at the University of Pennsylvania is looking to help people give with confidence of where that money will go. WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports.
The idea came to psychiatrist Andrew Siegel a few years ago on his way home from the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. The wheels started turning after he passed by a homeless man asking for money near the 13th Street stop along the Market Frankfurt L.
On the one hand, I wanted to provide some immediate assistance of his short-term needs. And at the same time, I wanted to know that the help I provided him would contribute towards meaningful long-term improvements in quality of life, like such as housing stability.
A lofty goal to solve in one night, but Siegel didn't let it go. This winter, he and co-founder Dan Treglia plan to formally launch Street Change, a free crowdfunding app they hope will put a dent in the city's street homeless population by eliminating a big emotional barrier, hesitation. The hesitation that comes from wanting to give a dollar, but also wanting to know where that dollar is going. Siegel says the app alleviates the moral dilemma of blindly giving to panhandlers while also making it quick and easy.
This program would fail if we were to require prospective donors to take a significant amount of time out of their, you know, commutes to work or their walks, you know, around Philadelphia to engage and to make donations.
So how does Street Change work? On a recent Tuesday afternoon, I meet up with Treglia at City Hall so he can show me. He and Siegel tested the app this spring with the help of a modest grant. It all starts with enrolling people living on the street. Outreach workers with the Mental Health Association of Southeastern Pennsylvania sign up homeless people, so far only in Center City. They discuss what their short-term needs are, maybe a pair of shoes, socks, a winter coat, but also those long-term goals Siegel was talking about, housing, healthcare. If they agree to be part of the app, all that info is loaded into a profile page. Then they're handed something called a Bluetooth beacon, a tear-shaped piece of plastic not much bigger than a pair of quarters side by side. It can be attached to a keychain or thrown in a pocket. The beacon sends out a signal that lets the app user know in real time that there's an enrollee nearby, what items they've requested, and how much money is needed to buy those items. In the newest version of the app, you'll get an alert when there's an opportunity to donate.
They'll say, hey, there's someone nearby, and then they can open up the phone and see one person or maybe a few people that are within range of their phone.
If you make a donation through PayPal, the online payment manager, you'll know exactly who your money is going to and what it's buying. When that coat or pair of shoes is crowdfunded, outreach workers reconnect with the person to let them know they can pick it up at one of the Mental Health Association's drop-in centers. The donors also get notified. At no time, though, does anyone know the locations of the homeless people part of the app. There's no Big Brother-style map tracking their whereabouts. Darnell was one of about 40 homeless people who was part of a pilot version of Street Change this spring. He says the app is a perfect match for someone like him. He doesn't like to ask for money on the street.
I still got pride of myself, you know, so that's what come on to do. And plus, I don't like nobody telling me no.
Darnell says the app paid for some basic toiletries, toothpaste, a bottle of mouthwash, a hat and a scarf, too.
It allowed me to not to run in somebody's store and take their stuff. Because when you're out here in the street, people do real stupid stuff, you know. And when you do stupid stuff, you get caught and you got to pay the consequences.
Treglia, who has been studying homelessness for the better part of a decade, says Street Change is a good carrot to get homeless people in the door, to start talking with a case manager about getting back on their feet, what can often be a daunting conversation.
You might say, hey, maybe you're not interested in housing right now, right? Or maybe you're not ready to get into that apartment right now, but hey, we can help you get the things that you need to survive for the moment. And that can create a connection that we can build on in future conversations to eventually move someone toward better health care and housing opportunities.
Association President Michael Brody says the app is also a good vehicle for homeless people who don't necessarily trust the organizations created to help them. He says many people feel like they've been burned too many times and that the odds are stacked against them.
Sometimes by entering the system, they've been forced to do things against their will that they didn't want to do. And so there is a reluctance on the part of some people to take that step again because of their experiences. And this is another way to try to gain somebody's trust, to build a relationship with them, to bridge a reason to be talking with each other and spending some time with each other.
Andrew Siegel, the Penn psychiatrist, says no one declined to participate in the pilot because they were concerned about privacy or carrying the Bluetooth beacon. It's unclear how many homeless people sleep on the street each night in Philadelphia. Every year, volunteers perform what's called a point-in-time count, but it's an estimate at best. 2016's total eclipses 700 people. It's estimated that thousands more experience homelessness in a given year. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Yesterday was Christmas Day, but it also marked this month's mini-moon day, where the moon is at its greatest distance from the Earth for a month. Newsworks Tonight's Dave Heller paid homage to the event with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute, in this week's edition of Sky Talk.
Derek, coincidence or something more? Or less?
Let's go with the something less. While it's fun to consider these sorts of things as having some meaning outside of just their coincidence, there really isn't anything that we can point to, except that I'm speaking particularly in reference to the overuse, in my humble opinion, of the term supermoon, describing when a moon appears larger in the sky than it normally would appear, yet ascribing a significance to that that really is beyond measure.
It's an optical delusion.
The effect actually does happen. The moon is larger and does appear brighter, but how do you actually recognize that? How do you measure that difference? And is it really that much significantly different from the moon at perigee, closeness to Earth, in any month? Because if we actually look at what happens with the cycles of the moon, we find that the moon has a close approach to Earth every month and a distant point from Earth every month, which is what happens to be yesterday, when the moon was at its greatest distance from the Earth for the month apogee. So I wonder if any folks out observing the moon last night noticed that it was smaller than usual. A mini-moon, let's say.
A ball bearing.
Barely visible to the eye. I don't think so, because we have nothing against which to measure it. And the other thing that we can add to this is that if you really do like to see the moon looking very, very large, it's a very simple thing to do. If you observe full moon as it's rising on the horizon or setting in the dawn sky the day after, you can easily get that illusion that you spoke of before when the moon is seen next to objects of known size, a well-known illusion. Not well understood, but a well-known illusion.
Derek, let's hearken back 48 years ago. On this day, three astronauts were returning to Earth from the first time having circumvented the moon.
Yes, I really love this story, Dave, because it indicates a couple of things. The determination of America at that time to press forward with the Apollo program of taking astronauts to the moon, taking humans to the moon for the first time, so much so that not even the Christmas holiday was an impediment to the progress necessary. But I also really enjoy this because of the fact that the iconic image of the Earth that we all know from the moon, of the Earth rising above the lunar horizon, was taken by one of the astronauts on this mission. It was Bill Anders. Bill Anders was along with Jim Lovell and Frank Borman on this trip around the moon. They did 10 orbits. They were at the moon on Christmas Eve and then headed back home to Earth to land on December 27th. The most interesting aspect, I think, about this crew is that Lovell and Borman were experienced astronauts, and for Bill Anders, this was his only flight. His only space flight was a flight to the moon. Can there be a better Christmas present?
Anders and his cohort were also obviously the first to directly view the dark side of the moon. Did it appear dark to them?
That's a really great question, because we use that term so loosely. Well, no, the moon's opposite side is not dark. Now, let's separate this from the nighttime side of the moon. So there is a nighttime side of the moon, of course, because when one side of the moon is facing the sun, of course, the opposite side has to be dark. And so the night can last 2 weeks. So when we're thinking about the rotation of the moon, there is the nighttime side of the moon. But that idea, the colloquial side of the dark side of the moon, well, that harkens from our thinking that as we look to the moon, we always see the same face of the moon. Of course, there's the iconic Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon, that helps to reinforce this.
Derek, there's this never substantiated rumor that Pink Floyd followed that hit up with an album called Water at Ceres.
Yes, I don't quite remember that album, but I'm sure it would be a revealing one, considering that we're now really clearly understanding that there's quite a bit of water at Ceres also. It's said that 30% of the mass of this largest of the asteroids in our solar system between the orbit of Mars and Jupiter is made of water.
Now, 30%.
30% of the mass of the asteroid is water. Now, the water is frozen beneath the surface, and one of the things that researchers have been able to identify about this is that it seems as if it has been possible for water to exist frozen just beneath the surface, no more than a meter below the surface, for billions of years. We've also been able to see outcroppings of this ice on the surface, and there have also been geysers of water mist and vapor out through this crust that clearly indicate that there is water there. Some even speculate the possibility of a liquid ocean beneath the surface. Water is much more prominent in our solar system than we ever thought before.
And perhaps in solar systems beyond ours.
More to be discovered.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old same thing. Come on, time.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Brad Linder for Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old same thing. Come on, sign up with Outer Space Ways Incorporated.